and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world for which every day is media day. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and we make media.
We do. We sure do. And we're here with another World Series preview episode. Now, the one you heard earlier this week was just Jake and I just giving our scorching hot takes about what this World Series between the Phillies and the Astros is going to look like. But now, finally, after we used to love having guests on our podcast, and we decided to catch up. We decided to compensate for all the guestless episodes over the last month and pack in six whole guests for you fine listeners into this episode. Jake is in Houston. He's at Minute Maid Park. I am not, unfortunately. I'm not traveling for this postseason. So we had to do some little movie podcast magic to make this happen, but we did it through the magic of Zoom and Tascams. We have this podcast here for you. And Jake, who are we going to hear from in this episode?
We're going to hear from Jake Mintz. We're going to hear from Jordan Schusterman. We're going to hear from the ambient sounds of Minute Maid Park. But more importantly, we're going to hear from Philadelphia Phillies outfielder Brandon Marsh, Phillies outfielder Matt Vierling, President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski, beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer Alex Coffey. And then on the Houston side, we're going to hear from Ryan Stanek, one of their relievers, and Jeff Passan, the second baseman for the Houston Astros.
Yes. Quick note on the President of Baseball Operations title. I love seeing it referred to as POBO. Like, I just love just seeing POBO wherever people are tweeting about these guys. And Dombrowski really, really, you know, embodies that POBO energy.
And the interviews you're going to hear, the setup has been very hilarious and very janky. It is me in the dugout with a microphone. Jordan is here on a tripod through a phone. And so people have been talking to his face. A lot of people have walked by and been like, Jordan. So even though you are not here, you are here.
I am. And the most funny part, of course, has been the people seeing all of your phone notifications come down while they've been talking to us. So if you hear any jokes about that, that's what the setup is. But we're super glad we were able to make this happen. Some super fun conversations. Dombrowski was fantastic. Both Philly center fielders were fantastic. Stanek was hilarious. Coffey and Passan, I mean, they're some of our favorites in the industry, and you'll know why we're talking to them. But yeah, it was a great time, and we hope you enjoy.
All right, we got Brandon Marsh here at the World Series. Brandon Marsh, you were traded halfway through the season. What was day one like of coming into a new place? Like, was it like the first day of school and you had to like introduce yourself to people? What did you wear on day one?
Yeah, I was actually going to say it was I wore the best thing I had in my closet that day when I came to Philly.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, you know, coming over to a new squad, there's always those like those nerves that'll kick in, seeing how you'll fit in with the guys. But at the end of the day, it's just baseball. So we're all one big family out there. We're out there just competing for the same thing. It's been a lot of fun. But I mean, the guys, they welcomed me in super quick. And they made it easy for my family and I to make the transition. So it's been a blessing the whole way.
I feel like players talk about Philly being different. And I'm sure growing up on the East Coast, you had a little bit of a sense for that. But how different is it compared to actually, you know, be living in it and playing for the Phillies compared to what you had heard about?
Yeah, you know, I grew up a Braves fan, so I watched the Phillies a bunch growing up. You know, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, all those guys. So I knew they had a really good fan base, just, you know, just from seeing it on the TV and knowing the Braves rival at some point. But you know, it's a blessing to get to play at the bank in front of all those guys. You can't ever hear yourself think or talk, so you're just out there balling. So it's you only have one option, and that's to play ball. So that's what we've been doing.
So you never got to go to college,
no.
Right? You were drafted straight out of high school. And as someone who played college baseball, like being around your team, you guys move like a college baseball team. Like, you party like a college baseball team. You are weird as hell like a college baseball team. You know what I mean? And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm curious for you, like, as someone who never had that experience, how different has this clubhouse been to other places you've played in terms of like replicating that time in your life that you never got?
Yeah, I always wondered what college would be like.
Yeah,
I think it was the best thing I didn't go.
Yeah,
but it's been a lot of fun celebrating, right. Popping bottles with the guys, staff, everybody. So there really hasn't been any like specific moments, but I mean, just the character that, of this team.
Yeah.
You know, the unity, it's been special to be a part of.
Because like so much of baseball when you're coming up in the minors is like, it's tough because it's like about you, right? Like you have to look out for you first, and like you're, it's less about the communal aspect of being on a team. And what I love about you guys is like you are that, right? Like you have to play for one another at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, the personal stats are thrown away at this point. You know, we've already had that talk. We're here to win games, pass the baton, get to the next hitter, so and get three outs and get back in. So that's the mission. That's the message that we have. And this is what we have to continue to keep doing.
So my last one for you is, you mentioned everyone was really welcoming when they came in, when you came in and after the trade. Is there one person that you've connected with in particular and you'd be like, that's my dude? Because I know you had, I know you and Joe Adele back in Anaheim. I remember interviewing you guys when you guys came up together. I don't know if you have someone on the Adele level, but is there one player in particular or teammate that you've gotten really close with?
So I've been around him now for like the last 3 weeks, and I know who that person is. I'm curious what Marsh is going to say.
Well, I got to say, I live with the Wolfman. I live with Maton. So Maton and I have gotten pretty close. You know, that's my guy.
How is he as a roommate?
He's a clean dude.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See, how are you as a roommate?
Not as clean as him. But, you know, we'll wake up in the morning, the whole kitchen, the whole living room, it's all spotless. And I know I didn't do it the night before, so
that's weird because Maton doesn't like move like a clean guy. Like he's
a clean dude. Yeah, wow. He makes sure all his stuff's in line, makes sure everything's put away. So it's good that I'm rooming with him. But I mean, I gotta say Maton for one of them. I mean Stoddard, you know, a bunch of the young guys. But I would say some of the veterans, you know, I mean, I've clicked well with Schwarber, Casty, Reese, Hart, pretty well.
Dude, anyone could click with Schwarber.
Yeah, I mean, Schwarber's like, a man. So I know Castellanos, he's taken me under his wing. He's been telling me more and more about the game on and off the field.
Yeah.
I mean, Hart, you know. And Reese, he's been a great leader for us, you know, on and off the field, the voice of our team. So he's a lot. I mean, just I can't really single anyone out. I've been vibing with everyone. So, and I'm looking forward to the future with these guys.
Two more. Number one, I want to ask you about defense in center, because this team, before you got here, like the biggest flaw was outfield defense. And like we know Castellanos and Schwarber work hard, but they're not Gold Glovers, and I think they know that, and they do the best that they can. But what that means is like for you, there's a lot of responsibility to be out there in center and to track balls down and like to be that guy. Has there been any kind of communication from the team where it's like, hey, we don't care if you go over five at the plate. Your job is to go out there and get the balls. And I guess for you, like how much pride do you take in being a vacuum cleaner?
Yeah, I mean, I take a lot of pride in defense. Just, you know, me being young in the game.
Yeah.
The bat's clicked. It hasn't clicked. You know, it hasn't really came around the way I wanted it to. But, you know, I can always control what I can out there in center.
Yeah.
So. It's been a lot of fun, you know, roaming around out there and just tracking fly balls down. But, I mean, yeah, the guys, they told me from day one, they were like, your job is to catch every ball in the outfield. So until I hear them say it, it's my ball. So that's kind of where we're at. And, I mean, those guys keep doing what they're doing at the plate. Yeah.
That's fine.
I can do my best to try to hold down the outfield with Matty V. So that's just what we're going to try to keep that going.
Last question. Let's talk quickly about wetness.
My hair's not wet.
It's not wet right now, but I did see you about, I want to say 15 minutes ago before BP. You got wet. You did the routine. What's been the response? So I like wrote a big article about you getting wet. And people have come up to me and been like, yo, the article on Marsh being wet is great. Have you had people ask you, like, why your hair's always wet? Has it been more of a thing this postseason than it was in Anaheim?
Yeah, you know, people think it's all grease. And I'm like, no, I wash my hair.
That's not what you told me.
I'm saying, like, I put conditioner in it.
Okay, you know what I mean? Okay, like, okay. But that's not washing it.
But it's not greasy.
Okay.
It's not greasy. You can smell it. You want to smell it?
Yeah.
Wait.
Smells fine.
I just want to know, is this something you started in Philly, or has this been all the way up through the big leagues? Or through like in your pro career?
So it started earlier this year in Anaheim.
Okay.
Where it was just, you know, kind of beginning of the summer. I was like, dude, it's hot out here. My hair is like getting frizzy and it's going all over the place. And I don't want to cut it, but I don't want it everywhere all on my face. So I water it down with a couple Yeah, maybe even a whole bottle of water, depending on how dry it is. You never know. But get a little towel after so it's not dripping too much. But, I mean, yeah, I want to keep it down and out of my face. So, and I feel like that's the quickest and easiest solution.
Here's my thinking on this. It's October now. You know, in Houston, you don't have to worry about it. You're playing inside. But there's October games where it's freezing. Like, are you, like, say you go back to Philly and it's 30 degrees. Are we still getting wet? Like, what's the plan there?
It doesn't matter, rain or shine, hot or cold, the hair is getting drenched. So we're gonna continue to keep that thing going. We're gonna keep it wet. And whether it's 30 degrees with 20 wind chill in Chicago or it's 75 and sunny here in Houston, the hair is gonna be drenched.
We're gonna get to a point, you know, like the kid who would go on vacation for like winter break in elementary school to like the Caribbean and they would come back with like the things in their hair. You're gonna like have like icicles, like you're running in center at the bank, like clinking around, making big noise.
You know, there's times I know when we were at the bank, I think it was against the Braves. It was a little rainy.
Yeah.
A little cold day. And I had to wet the hair and I was running out of center and it was dripping down my back. I was like, oh man, I shouldn't be doing this. But
we can't put you on the aisle with hypothermia, dude. That's a no-go.
Let's just end on this here. Your name is literally Marsh. I mean, this part has not been hammered home enough. I mean, I'm looking at the definition of Marsh on Google, and it says an area of low-lying land which is flooded in wet seasons and typically remains waterlogged at all times. I mean, that's you. You are typically waterlogged at all times.
Yeah, shout out my parents for the last name.
shout out to Brandon, Mr. and Mrs. Fam. Marsh.
Amazing.
The Marsh fam. Brandon, my dude, thank you for spending time with us.
Appreciate
an absolute character.
Thank you.
One of a kind. Hey, good luck in the World Series, by the way.
It's time to get active. Let's go, Phil.
Good luck,
dude. Keep fighting.
Adios, sir. All right, we are here with Philadelphia Phillies center fielder against lefties.
Yes.
Defensive replacement, but is also irreplaceable. And elite vibes guy, Matt Vierling. Matt, hello.
Good to be here, guys.
Was that a sufficient intro?
What an introduction. Wow.
I mean, it was truthful. It was kind. I thought it was everything you would need.
It's a great introduction. I think you hit everything.
Wonderful. Yeah. I want to turn the clock back to the fall of 2015.
Wow.
Matt Vierling is a freshman at Notre Dame College in Indiana, fresh off your senior year at a St. Louis high school.
Uh-huh.
That October, I assume you grew up a Cardinals fan. Is that fair to assume?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
That October, the Cardinals lost in the playoffs. Do you remember why?
Oh. Oh, man.
Against the Cubs.
It was against the Cubs. I'll tell you what, that was a busy fall for me. I don't know if I remember all that well.
So a gentleman named Kyle Schwarber
hit
a ball
now
on the top of the scoreboard at Wrigley Field. And I would imagine that a young Matt Vierling was watching that and was like, fuck this guy.
You jogged my memory a little bit there. I do remember that. It was a mammoth home run.
Okay.
That one hurt pretty bad. My roommate is actually from Springfield, Illinois. Cole Daly, and we're both Cardinal fans, so that one hit us pretty hard now that I remember.
And here we are now, and no longer is Matt Vierling at any point thinking, fuck Kyle Schwarber.
Jesus Christ, I mean, he showed me a video of that home run a couple months ago. I remember being fired up for him, how things have changed.
I know, it's pretty crazy for you to think of, right? Like, I was thinking about that, like, kid from St. Louis, just steamed, because it's like the Cubs are good now, like, and it's all Kyle Schwarber's fault.
Oh, man, I remember being at Notre Dame too. It's right by Chicago. There were so many Cubs fans on that campus, so that one hurt pretty bad. I remember.
Have you ever been out, you know, pitching change, you're in center, Schwarber comes over, and there's just like a silence, and then he's just like, man, I crushed that ball, man. Like, you remember that? Like, you were a sad little freshman, and I made you angry? Yeah? Yeah?
There hasn't been one out there in the outfield like that, but actually, a couple days ago, he was looking at some video.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he brought up that one, but he was looking at some past ones just to kind of get the vibes going again. And yeah, I'm like, man, dude, you've crushed some absolute mammoth home runs.
That must be so nice to be a Kyle Schwarber and just like to pull up old tanks that you've hit just to like feel good about yourself.
It's
That's
so...
not something that me and Jordan like can do, right? Like when we
How
feel
about me?
Well, you can more than us. Like, you've done things on a baseball. Like, me and Jordan, like, when we are bummed, like, we just have a beer or, like, hug someone we love. You guys get to just pull up highlights.
True. I mean, he's got quite a few more than me like that.
Yeah, which that's true.
Which is pretty cool. But yeah, no, he hit some mammo tanks. And, yeah, it's cool when he goes back. It's funny. When he goes back and looks at some of the video, it's, like, so low-key. It's like not a big deal. He's like, oh, I hit this ball pretty hard. And I look and it's just like one of the biggest home runs in playoff history. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, anyway. In the postgame presser, we asked him about the 488 foot. He goes, a point's a point.
Right.
We're like, right. Dude, like, that's all you got. Like, you hit it 488 feet. Okay. So I actually do want to ask you about this team being like a college team, because I think you mentioned this at some point, and being around you guys, like having played college baseball, you guys move and interact with one another like you're a college team. And I'm curious, for you, someone who spent 3 years playing college baseball, when did it kind of dawn on you that this group wasn't going to be like a bunch of hardos and was going to be a more enjoyable experience?
I mean, I would say it really hit me when Harp and Seggy went down. Mm-hmm. I think we started kind of coming together as a team, and we had like a awesome karaoke night. Like, everybody got up there and just let it eat.
Where was that?
St. Louis. Okay. Like, this was earlier in the year. And I remember, like, that's type of stuff, you know, you're at like a college party and everyone's just screwing around, having a good time. And like that kind of got the vibes going. And then ever since then, it's just kind of been like, everybody's been, you know, pretty vulnerable with each other, getting really close and just super like having a good time partying after the games, just enjoying each other's company. And we're always together. That's what kind of reminds me of college. You're just always around these guys all the time. And that's why I think we love playing on the road, because you're just with each other all the time. Yeah.
And you guys had to be on the road for that stretch, right?
Those last 10 games, although we were on the road, I think it was like pretty vital for this playoff run. It kind of made us closer as a team.
Yeah. Jordan?
So one more Notre Dame / college related question. I know you were a few years later, but Trey Mancini, who was, of course, across the other dugout, played at Notre Dame as well before you. Now, he had a great career there. Were there any, when you were on campus, were there stories like, oh, man, you know, Trey once did this, either on or off the field, where it was like, oh, remember when Mancini, you know, hit that homer in fall ball, or remember when Mancini did X, Y, Z? And you were probably like, God, why are we still talking about this Mancini guy? So do you have any memories of that?
Yeah. You know what?
You were telling me something the other day.
No,
right?
I got good stuff. No, he had just come off an awesome year, if I recall. And it's my, like you said, freshman year, 2015 fall, like your freshman year in college.
You're just trying not to drown.
You're just like, it's one of the best times in your life.
Right.
And so in walks this guy to finish a semester, Trey Mancini, and everyone's like, Trey's such a good guy. So Trey was actually there my freshman fall. Him and a guy named Eric Jagler, who was a first rounder with the Yankees out of Notre Dame. So they came back together, roomed with each other, I think, and just, it was the best time. I mean, you're a freshman, you're hanging out with everybody on the team. You're just trying to soak it all up. And then he would hang out with the freshmen more than the seniors or whatever. You know, he just loved to have a good time with everybody. So he could not have been a better human being to us as freshmen. And yeah, he loves to go out, have a good time. At least he did back then. So it was,
that's
a lot
so
of fun.
Cool. Just to have like one of the best players in like the last 30 years of the program around.
And that, and then also, you know, he goes through all that stuff and fights cancer, beats it. I mean, it was just such a cool story. And to get to actually know him and like text him and like, you know, it was like one of the coolest
things. He's one of the best. He's like one of the best.
Bar none, one of the best people in baseball. Yeah.
So you've had a pretty interesting kind of year this year where now you've settled into a point where you're going up against lefties. Like, that's your job. Yeah. You're here to hit lefties and catch the ball in the outfield. Right?
Yeah.
At what point did it kind of dawn on you that, like, you needed to kind of accept that specific role for the remainder of the season?
I think when everybody got healthy towards the end of the year, you look at the guys out there, Cassidy, Schwarbs. Yeah. I mean, Marsh is phenomenal. Like, there's a lot of good players out there, you know? So I think us all as a team together collectively kind of bought into whatever Tomps needed us to do. And yeah, I think towards the end of the year, especially those last 10 games, it was mainly that. And Castellanos was coming back and feeling better. And it was kind of like, okay, this is my role. I'm going to accept it. Mm. And, you know, I'm going to make the most of it and do whatever I can to help the team win. And
right,
we're here now. So
there, you don't seem like you guys have a lot of me guys on the team. Yeah, like, no. I very rarely do guys have the ass. Like, people are pretty.
Oh, well. We'll still get the ass, but just at each other, like brothers fighting. But
oh, I see. So you'll have the ass. For those of you listening, by the way, who don't know what that means, that is like a very inside baseball way to say grumpy.
Yeah, you're just salty, grumpy, pissed off that day. It could be at someone or, you know.
At the world.
Yeah, which does happen plenty. So
yeah, have the ass at the world. Go ahead, Jordan.
So we talked to Brandon Marsh earlier. You know, he came over via trade. And we were wondering, you know, who did he click with the fastest? I know, you know, you made your debut in 2021, but is there one guy on this team that you feel like you've clicked the most? He mentioned Nick Maton, who he's been living with. I don't know if you have a roommate on the team as well, but is there one player or teammate that you'd shout out and be like, yeah, that's my guy. I can get after him in for better or for worse.
No matter what. I mean, all of us young guys are so close. Mm-hmm. Marshy lives with Maton. They've started being like a really good friendship. But like me, Maton and Guthrie came up, Dalton Guthrie came up together through the system.
Iron pigs for life, baby.
Yeah, piggies, baby.
oink, oink, oink.
Bomer's awesome. I would say like, I don't know if I can pick just one guy, but I would say like Guthrie, Maton, and Bomer. Those three guys I've come all the way up with. And I live with Guthrie in like a cabin in the woods in AA, like $300 a month rent. Just like grinding.
Like outside of Reading?
Right outside of Reading, like 25 minutes outside of Reading. There was like five of us in there. And we've been in some grindy spots. So I mean, now we're in the World Series. I mean, it's crazy. So it's been a long road. And
dude, that's so crucial. Like being in these moments with people that you genuinely like. Because there are teams in the league, like I'm not asking you to name names, but like there are teams in the league where guys don't like each other. Like you can overcome that and win a championship if you're good enough, right?
Yeah.
But there is something about going to work every day and being around people who you consider your friends.
100%. I mean, these guys are all the guys I came up with. And the guys that have come over have just clicked so well with everybody. It's, you usually don't see that very often. So it's really cool what we got going on. It's been amazing. And you talk about coming to work each day and like enjoying it. I mean, it's like the best time.
You guys fuck around more than any major league team I've been around. And I mean that in a good way. Like, you get your work in and everything, but when you're out on the field, you enjoy the sport of baseball. And I find that to be incredibly refreshing because, like, dudes like us on the side, we watch it. We're like, I hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. Like, you've one of the best jobs in the world, you know? Yeah.
But in reality, you're not going to enjoy. Like, some people don't enjoy it. Some people, teams don't mesh as well. But this team's been amazing with how we've come together. And, it's hard to find, like, a group of people or people that don't really click with each other on this team.
Yeah. So. One more question for me is I want to ask you about Harper because we are all generally the same age. I think Jordan and I are like a year or two older than you.
Yeah.
But like when we were kids in high school, that Sports Illustrated cover was like iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like we all remembered that.
I remember that too. Yeah.
And like the videos of him coming out, like he was the first dude our age. He was like the first internet baseball superstar.
100%.
Right.
Yeah.
And now you are like, you know, you see his butt every day. And like
it's true.
At what point did that kind of dawn on you that I am waking up every day and going into work with this like generational talent who I grew up watching? And he's not even that much older than us.
I know, it's the crazy part. Last year I came up, that's when I first kind of hit me, you know, you get your first taste of Major League Baseball and you're around a bunch of superstars, JT, him, just these guys that like Wheels, Nola, like all these guys are household names. And that was the first taste of it where I kind of was like, okay, you know, I'm playing with these guys and, you know, doing my best to compete with them and help the team win. So last year I really felt that. But this year he's just one of the guys. It's awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that, like, cool. That is so interesting how that develops because when you're 13, it's like, holy shit, that's Bryce Harper. And now you're 26.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's just Bryce. And there's no moment along the way where that just flips, right? It's just like a day in, day out of this becoming your life over time.
You kind of get used to it.
Right.
Being around these guys. And they're just one of the guys. But I went out to eat with some of my buddies in Miami, like a bunch of my high school friends and college friends, like six of us were sitting there eating, and Harp and Sauter walk up, they're getting dinner because they're best buds. And my buddy, and then they stopped and talked with us just like normal people, and or Harp did and stopped and talked. And then my buddies were like, wow. And I'm, right. and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess it is pretty cool. Pretty good. You know?
Yeah. So that is wow.
Yeah, you kind of get used to it, but it's, these guys are awesome. They're just one of the guys, and they love to do what we do too.
Jordan, anything else before we let this man, you know, try win a World Series?
No, I mean, yeah, I guess you could just be like, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm playing the outfield. This Bryce guy's over here DHing. I mean, geez,
lazy I'm ass.
Because I can catch
the ball.
Don't
worry, I got it. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I got it, Bryce. Hilarious. Don't worry about it. Matt Vierling, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Jordan, Mincy, thank you guys.
Hey, see, this is why I like Vierling. He calls me Mincy, which no one has called me Mincy in the last like 6 years, man.
We are here with Phillies President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. You're in the World Series again.
It's great. It never gets old, believe me. I hope that we can do this like the next 5-6 years. That'd be great.
All right, good. That was my first question. Does it get old? I know these teams have been different players, different cities, but is there any part of it where you're like, oh man, I could have had an October off, but instead I'm back here at the World Series again?
No, there's not one part of me that ever thinks that. I mean, it's amazing how your calendar, somebody was just asking me actually how I enjoyed my days off like the last couple of days. And I said, well, we don't have days off, really. It's a whole different schedule because, I mean, a lot of clubs, as you know, have already started working towards next year. And we've had some of those conversations ourselves internally. But right after the World Series, 2 days, if you go to Game 7, 2 days after that, the general manager's meeting starts. So you still have to be prepared for all those things taking place. So compared to others that may be taking the days off, there's not like quite the same.
Dave, when do you get to go on vacation? Like, when in the general manager's calendar do you get to spend 3 days on a beach?
Well, really what I've learned throughout the years, if you want to get away, there's no 100% time where you're going to be away. But for me, the best time, and we have younger children that have developed now, they're 22 and 24. What we always used to go is between Christmas and New Year's. Mm. So if you're ever in a position where you're going to spend some time with your family and have a chance to get away, that would be it. So that's when we always go. And in fact, that's when we're going again this year. We have something, spend Christmas time with Thanksgiving and Christmas time with one side of the family, my wife's or my side. And then that time we've always done things with our children.
So Jordan, everybody but Preller and DePoto takes that time off.
I was going to say, you mentioned how some other teams have already gotten a jump on free agency and thinking about those things. I mean, that's been so much of your success over the years. Are you itching? Like, is it hard to stop yourself and be like, oh no, I can't think about that yet. I have a World Series to try and help win here.
No, it's not really hard because this is such a focus, because I do know that I'll feel a lot better with 4 more wins than 4 more losses because that feeling is a lot different. But, I mean, you know yourself. I mean, I've got a pulse and you're working on it all really year long. And as you get near the end of the season, you're still focused on what your needs may be as an organization, what players may fit those needs, which organizations have those. So you put some of your own internal meetings finalization. Like, for example, normally we have those type of meetings before the general managers, where we bring all of our scouts into town and everybody in our front office with some of our coaching staff members. But we'll wait. We'll go to the general managers' meetings, lay the foundation, then come back and have those meetings to be ready. But we'll be ready for them.
Let me ask you about the designated hitter as a thing, right? So we have it this year in the National League for the first time. I'm curious, did it impact the way that you went about constructing the roster this past offseason? Was it, because, you know, you look at the team, and without the designated hitter, Bryce Harper maybe has surgery in May, and we're not having this conversation right now. Sure. So I'm curious, last offseason, how vital was that to approaching the winter?
Well, it was extremely important for us. I mean, first of all, we wouldn't have anticipated that Bryce was going to be our DH almost all year. We thought he'd be our right fielder. And the DH has been very helpful for us in that regard, because he wouldn't be able. But we probably wouldn't have been able to sign Schwarber and Castellanos both.
Yeah.
We just, there's no way we would have done it because we wouldn't have had room for to play both of them. So we would have had to identify one of them over the other at that particular time and make that type of signing.
Yeah.
So it really changed the way our club was put together a great deal. But this has allowed us to put that extra bat in our lineup
right.
that we wouldn't have been able to do if we didn't have the DH.
It makes me laugh to think about the Phillies fans who loved pitchers hitting. Right? They don't exist anymore. There's no one in the city of Philadelphia clamoring for an Aaron Nola at-bat where they get to see Bryce do it. Like, right? Like,
yeah, I would say you're absolutely right about that. So it's a, but really, yeah. Even though I've been in both leagues, I've been really more over the last time period, more of a fan of having the DH.
Right.
Because the pitchers have gotten to the point where they haven't hit enough in their life. There's too many of them that are a threat to even get a hit.
Yeah.
And then you're worried every time they swing the bat or every time they have to run the bases with almost all of them. I know there's a Madison Bumgarner type of guy and a Zach Greinke, but those are far and few in between. So I'd much rather see Harper hit than I would. Yeah.
Would you rather see Bryce Harper change the trajectory of baseball with a home run to left field or Ranger Suarez bunt in the sixth inning in
that's
May?
That's a pretty easy selection when it comes down to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Especially in the World Series, right? It's one thing in the regular season when you have pitchers taking at bats, and now you get to the World Series and you have National League hitters trying to hit. It was so goofy. It's so goofy to watch. We don't miss it.
Yeah.
No, I don't at all miss it. And I remember, and I would, of course, consider myself a baseball, traditionalist because I've been around the game so long. And then when it first came in, I really wasn't an advocate of the DH. But over time period, I really, and I do think from a fan perspective, most fans prefer runs scored. The pitcher's duels.
Yep.
Most of them want to see runs score. So, you're going to score a lot more runs with the DH than you are with the pitchers hitting.
My last question for you, Dave, is Bryce Harper. He has been such a big part of this team, and I know you weren't necessarily there when they signed him, but you've had the opportunity to have so many generational talents on your teams over the years. What is different about him, watching him, this type of player he is, and that you've certainly experienced over these last few weeks?
Well, he is just, first of all, the talent level that he possesses, very few people possess that type of talent. I mean, they're far and few in between. They're the superstar type players, and he is that. The second thing about him is that he is so driven to be successful. And I think for him, part of that deals with the expectations of being in a position where he's been like that since he's been a youngster. So for him, as has been explained, unless he was the 1-1 pick in the major league draft, it was a disappointment.
Yeah.
Well, how many people can you say that about? I mean, being drafted third is pretty good, right? But he was supposed to be 1-1 since he was 11 or 12 years old. And so he has taken on those expectations, and it drives him. And sometimes I think probably for his own sake, I mean, you wish that he, for his own enjoyment, could take a step back from that and just say, enjoy the moment. And I have a feeling if we win this thing, he'll enjoy the moment. But I do think it's that there are very few people that have that type of pressure on them.
I think, being around your team the last month or so, I have seen him have some of those moments where in a lot of ways he did not have a typical childhood, right?
Correct.
In the same way that you and I did, where we could like run around and, be stupid, right?
That's
right. He didn't have that same ability. And I have this moment in my mind just kind of seared into it of him jumping up and down, singing to Dancing on My Own, where he never had that opportunity in college or in high. He didn't go to college, right? Like, he didn't have that. And now in this, at 30, he's finally getting to have baseball be something that is joyful.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And I think part of that, and of course not living with him when he was growing up, but knowing that that type of expectation exists.
Right.
But I think also too, that's the beauty of winning.
Mm.
Because the winning aspect of it takes all that individual stuff off your back.
Right.
And I remember, when I was in Detroit, I talked to Kirk Gibson, and he was the ultimate warrior, and he hit that famous home run. But he always used to tell me all year long, but when you get to the postseason, you can strike out four times, right? But if you win the game, that's what's really important.
Right.
And so winning that ultimate championship, or you strike out four times and that fifth time up, you get a base hit to win the game.
Right.
And it means so much more when it gets to the postseason and winning than maybe during the regular season where the expectations are just greater.
What was your first memory of Bryce? Because you were with the Tigers in, it was like 08, 09 when everyone was scouting him. And at the time, you guys were having a lot of success. So I'm sure at no point you ever envisioned having the opportunity to draft him. Did you ever get to see him in person or like when he was in junior college? Or
no, I did not, because we didn't have that type, knew we didn't have that type of chance. So really for me, of course, everybody knew about him.
Right.
But I think for me, it was that youngster showing up at 19 years of age and seeing the highlights and the flamboyant young individual that had this oozing talent for him, but also was just a dynamic figure.
Oh,
you could
God.
Just see it. So, I mean, that was really my first type of the way I envisioned him and saw him.
Because, like, for me and Jordan, we grew up in the D.C. area. We're 27. Okay, so, like, we're 15 years old, 14 years old, and the Sports Illustrated article comes out, and it's, like, the first person generally our age who's baseball famous. And he has, for kids of our generation, like, he has grown up with us. And, like, to see him here with a beard the size of a rosemary bush, you know, like, it is very striking to see the development that he's had over the years.
Yes. Well, I'm sure. I mean, you see it in a different way, but that's what makes the game fun.
Right.
And I really do think, which is great for the game of baseball, and they talk about it, but having Bryce Harper, and I don't mean to downplay the rest of the Philadelphia Phillies, because but having that type of figure and that type of personality in the World Series is great for the game of baseball.
Yeah.
And people want to see this type of player play, and I think it's great for the game. And it wouldn't surprise me if he rose to the occasion, did the same thing in a World Series that he did in the LCS. That's how he is.
I was going to say, it's also great for you, president of the Phillies, because he's on your team. And that is
no question.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Dave, thank you so much for joining us. This was an absolute blast. And good luck in the World Series again.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, we are here with Philadelphia Phillies beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Alex Coffey, one of our favorite people in all of baseball. Hello, Alex. How are you?
Good. Good. Running on fumes.
One of our favorite people? I mean, Alex is great, but that's like, that's high praise.
Hey.
You don't think I deserve
that
praise?
No, I'm kidding. Alex is spectacular.
Alex, sorry, you just said you're running on fumes.
I am.
Our good friend, Brandon Marsh. Running on fumes. Alex, the World Series hasn't even started. I mean, you're already, you got a long way to go here. I mean, we got to find some extra energy.
I'm not, the end is not in sight, but I'll find it somewhere.
Okay, caffeine. So it's your first year on the beat, and you're already here in the World Series. Has that, like, sunk in on a personal level that you are getting to do the whole shebang immediately?
No, I don't think that the firing of Joe Girardi has sunk in yet, and that happened in June. So, no, I haven't processed any of this yet.
Well, and you know, we can joke about just how crazy this ride is, but I'm curious, just right as a media member, and you know, you look on the other side, and the Astros media crew, I mean, this is just casual stuff. I mean, we're doing this every year. We're of course we're doing stuff in October. So when during this season, and I know that this postseason ride since it started has been kind of an incredible thing to watch, when during the regular season, certainly long after Girardi was gone, were you like, maybe this team has something that could push them even to a second round of the postseason? Forget the World Series. I know that was not necessarily on your radar.
Yeah.
But was there a turning point for you when you were like, they actually might have something here?
I mean, I think you look at their they've had a ton of come from behind wins, and they're not come from behind wins that are like, you know, a walk-off home run from Bryce or a walk-off home run from Kyle Schwarber. It's like Garrett Stubbs hits his first career home run for a walk-off home run.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, things like that. And then, like, Alec Bohm and Matt Vierling breaking Josh Hader for a little bit. Like, that was another one. Bryson Stott had a walk-off home run. Like, a lot of the guys that were stepping up were their depth guys or their younger guys, like people that you wouldn't expect. And depth is something that this team has lacked for a long time. So I think those moments, like, you know, gave you confidence. But obviously, as you guys have seen, this team is like a roller coaster of emotion. I'm trapped in a glass case of emotions all the time.
But the funny thing is, like, for you, it's like they've been doing dumb shit all year. Like, they've been doing irrational, bizarre stuff. They've just stopped doing the bad stuff over the last three weeks.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah.
Enough. It's not like they're the greatest defensive team of all time.
Yeah.
But they are.
They don't let it spiral. That's
correct.
The difference.
They don't let it spiral.
Like, we've seen defensive misplays during this postseason run, but they don't let it, like, you know, like, turn into something bigger. So I think that that's a big difference.
So, Alex, we enjoy your work. You're good at writing words. Bryce Harper has now forced us to come up with all kinds of different descriptors for the kinds of things that he's doing on the field. When you're sitting in the press box and you're watching Bryce Harper do what he's done over these last few weeks, are you struggling to be like, what am I witnessing here? How am I supposed to totally capture what is happening in front of me?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think you run out of adjectives after a while. I mean, one thing that I guess isn't really being mentioned as much is that he's DHing because he's injured technically. You know, he's probably going to have to address that this offseason. So, you know, the fact that he's doing what he's doing, putting up a historic postseason and he's injured is like crazy.
Have you had to use a thesaurus for him? Be honest. Like I, you know, I've been writing a lot more now and I will admit that at certain times I do go to thesaurus.com. Yeah. And I know that maybe that's looked at. Have you had to use a thesaurus for Bryce over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah. I mean, you want to use words that are like that people know, you know, you don't want to make it too jargony and like.
You want to use words that Bryce Harper would know himself, right? Like you don't want to talk past, no offense to Bryce. Like I'm sure he's like relatively smart.
Yeah.
But he did not go to college. And so there are probably, you know, words in the depths of the thesaurus.
He didn't go to 11th grade.
I think he went to junior college. Didn't he go to JUCO?
Yes, he went to JUCO. I can't imagine he was in class all that much in JUCO. He didn't go for the education, Alex.
That's why you go.
That's why you go to JUCO, right, as a baseball player.
You mentioned, too, right, he's been injured. I've seen this mentioned. Is like Tommy John on the horizon for Bryce? Like, do we know exactly? I know Phillies fans don't care right now, but
no,
but okay, so you don't know. I haven't missed anything.
We don't know, okay. But I mean, the fact that they've had this long postseason run and they can't address it like now makes me think that it might impact how soon he's able to get back. You know,
that's fine.
A couple more questions for you. Game 4 of this series is a problem for the Philadelphia Phillies, because the Astros have 83 good pitchers and the Phillies have like six. Two questions, can they win game 4? And if they don't, can they win the series without winning game 4? I mean, obviously mathematically they can, but like, are they good enough to do that?
I mean, what I'll say is like, they won a bullpen game in their last series, you know, like they've done all these things that we didn't expect them to be able to do. And
that's
it seems
true.
Like every, and I know that that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I'm not a betting person, to be transparent, but I would not bet against them because they've been able to surpass every expectation so far. So, you know.
What's the hardest you've laughed over the last 3.5 weeks? It has been a particularly joyful experience covering this team.
Yeah.
I think they make it relatively easy, the players on this team, to make it enjoyable to be around. Is there a moment that stands out to you where you just laughed your ass off?
I can think of one during the regular season that comes to mind,
okay,
if that's okay. Like, actually, there are two. Like, both involve Jose Alvarado. One was a ball came like flying back at him, like a really hard hit liner, and he just like turned around and stopped it with his butt.
With his butt?
Yeah.
Okay. And on the mound.
Yeah, on the mound. Like flipped around, like fielded it, and then threw it to first base, and it was an out.
I mean, that's no
gold,
strength.
Gold,
right?
Ass awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, like,
I think that was in San Diego. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
We'll and then the second replay. One was like, there was a pop fly, and like he was trying to field it and he missed it by like 20 feet and Bohm caught it, but he was like waving everyone off. He was like, I've got it. And Bohm was like, no, you don't.
I've seen that one. I remember that play. That was great.
Yeah,
Alvarado
was like
30 feet. He's really got a, he knows his strengths. He knows I can't field, so I'm just going to turn around and use my big butt.
My cake.
Right.
Exactly. Golden cake award. Gold cake award. Alex, we really appreciate you taking a couple minutes to hang
sure,
out with us.
I provided some real insight here.
No, you did. You provided the insight that we need. Before we go, who wins the World Series and how many games?
I hate predictions, but...
Okay, then don't. Then predict something else. Don't predict who wins. Give me something completely irrelevant.
Who's
the
midterms?
No.
The midterms.
Midterms? Just, you could just be like, who's going to sign Brandon Nimmo? You could just predict that if you want. Like
Fetterman and Oz, how many games? Fetterman and six.
Fetterman in six. That's my prediction.
All right, that's Alex Coffey's prediction. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. This is Lindsay Rhodes, host of the NFL Roadshow, a SiriusXM podcast, inviting you to join me three, yes, three times a week for NFL analysis that goes beyond the low-hanging fruit. On Mondays, we react to the biggest stories of the NFL weekend. On Wednesdays, we pick one topic to really dig in on. And on Fridays, I'll give you all the fantasy football advice you need in just 15 minutes. We call it the Fantasy 15. Download new episodes of the NFL Roadshow right now on the SXM app, included with all of our trials and popular plans, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are here with Astros reliever Ryan Stanek. Ryan, it's so good to see you as always. And here you are in the World Series once again. I remember last year we talked to you at the World Series. We talked to you a lot about your hair. This time, I think we're going to talk about baseball. Is that okay?
That's cool. Yeah, it seems fair.
So earlier I congratulated you for a season in which your ERA started with a one. And you responded to me and you said, that's too high. It should start with a zero.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to ever give up a run.
Ever. Like,
who ever wants to give up a run? That's
not
stupid.
Me.
Yeah, why would you ever want to give up a run?
But I'm curious about, like, seeing your ERA as a reliever and the first number of your ERA and how that makes you feel as a reliever, right? You have been across the board. I'm sure you've seen the ERA start with a 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. At the end of a season, if it starts with a 2, are we happy?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I feel like you ask anybody at the start of the year, it's like, hey, if you had a 2, would you feel good about it? I'm like, I don't think there's any person on a roster that would go, nah, that sucks.
Right.
But you're like, you obviously never want to give up a run, but then you're like, realism sets in. And you're like, yeah, no, that'd be a really good year. So, yeah.
Yeah, what, like, one is sick. You know there's only one qualified reliever with a lower ERA than you during the regular season. Do you know who it is?
Yeah, I'd heard. I'd seen it.
Okay.
Evan Phillips for the Dodgers.
But like only, by 0.1, right? By 0.01, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you only had six outings this year where you allowed a run out of 61. So you were you know, coming off the mound happy a lot of the time. Now, you had a good season last year. Was there something different this year where you're like, oh, I figured this out? Now my ERA can start with a 1 instead of a 2 or 3.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I executed well this year. And I think, you guys know, like, being a reliever is kind of fickle. Like, obviously, you have to throw the ball good. That's like, paramount. But also, like, you have to have a little bit of luck on your side. Like, I think the difference between, like, I don't know, maybe like a 4 and a 5 is, like, just pitching well and pitching better, you know what I mean? And then like the difference between like a 3 and a 4 is like some like
striking guys out more.
And then like you the further down, it's like at some point it gets to be like, all right, like situationally some things had gone like you're probably your way, like regardless, like relieving like one bad day, one slam like will ruin a year if like at that point. So you're sitting there like, okay, well, how do you mitigate damage and like eliminate like the big crooked numbers? And I think that right there, limiting the crooked numbers, was like something that I did like very well this year, just like limiting damage, like and as a reliever, that's all you can do is like limit damage and hope for the best.
But the other thing is, like, I think that helps the final number is how dope the whole bullpen is.
For
because
sure.
Like, if you come into a game with a clean inning and you go out, bloop, out, walk, the chances are the Astros bullpen is going to strand your runs instead of like in a previous year where those just become your runs that touch home plate, right? Like that's a big part of it.
For sure. Honestly, like I don't remember what exact day it was, but it was the last day we played in Baltimore. I'd been throwing the ball really good. It was like the last day. I think the last day I gave up a run, and it was like I got the first guy out, backside single, walk, and then it might have been two backside singles and then a walk, and I ended up with a base loaded with 2 outs, and I got pulled, and Abreu came in. and faced Mullins at the top of the lineup and came in and saved me, which
right.
is like
right.
that's like, I think those are the times where you're like, you got to get a little bit fortunate, but also like fortune favors like preparation. And like, we have a lot of guys that are very prepared and very like on it with obviously good stuff and ability to execute in situations. So like, yeah, there's a little bit of luck, but it's also like your teammates pick you up. And like, there have been times where the situation has been reversed. Guys have left runners on and
you,
come in.
You go take up.
So, yeah, so it's like, it's very much you pat, like our bullpen is very proud of the fact that like we take care of our own and like you help your boys out, which matters. And it helps. Yeah. It obviously helps in the final season line.
So Jordan, you want to ask about the bullpen?
Well, yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the preparation and the execution, whatever. But let's talk about the pure stuff, because there's some nasty shit going on down there. And it's a huge variety. Like, there's almost every kind of pitch, right? You've got the splitters, you've got the changeups, you've got crazy sliders, crazy curveballs, crazy four seamers, right? Like you have. So is there one pitch that you're especially jealous of your teammates in the bullpen that you're like, I would love to have that. That would be great.
I mean, there's a lot of them, honestly, because there's so many good weapons, and it's not just in the bullpen. Like, hell, I would love to have Framber sinker. That'd be nasty. That pitch is ridiculous. Or uh-huh. or Lance's sweeping like sweeper, like mm-hmm. that's gross. Like, and then you get into the bullpen, or Javi. Like, I have a good fastball, but Javi has just an absolute unicorn of a fastball, and like, just like, there are guys throughout the list, like the ability for Hector and Rafi to throw like good sinkers and good fours, like throw them both well. And right. then like, it's just like the combination of all the things. Like, obviously Abreu's off-speed pitches are disgusting. So it's like, everybody does something special. Like, and I think yeah. that's what one thing we realized is like, if you don't have something like that, you're probably not.
You're not going to be here.
Well, yeah, you're not going to be in our bullpen, because like, there's like the one thing that I feel like our front office does really well is identify like good stuff that will play, and that's how they kind of like
right.
build a staff.
So I'm curious about it, like, okay, so like Hunter Brown shows up.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I'm not exactly sure when he shows up, but at some point during the year,
September
he shows up. And so this guy shows up, and so you guys are like, this guy's got to have something fucking crazy. Like, this guy must have, if they brought him up here in this spot, he must have something nuts.
And he does,
yeah. right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
All of his stuff is good. I mean, he's on like a 95 on our slider. But you're looking at it, and I think the craziest part about it is, like, for him to come up, we optioned a dude with a 2.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, Seth Martinez, who is nasty, we optioned a guy with a 2 for a guy to make his debut. Like,
right.
that has to say something. And obviously the makeup and his stuff is not really like
normal.
Yeah, not normal, and it's not it's a like undeniable like skill set. So you're sitting there going like, okay, like I get it. Like, everybody understands. It's just like, it's unfortunate that a guy that's performed so well has to go, but like you see the stuff, and it's hard to argue.
These are good problems for
yeah,
a team to have, right? Like,
sure.
it that's a tough conversation, but you know, it is part of what makes the bullpen so, like, watching it from afar, undeniable. It is an undeniably elite group of pitchers, and you guys carry yourself that way, and it's like, I'm sure you've been in bad bullpen, like in the minors
sure.
growing, like
for
you've
sure.
been in bad bullpens. How is the vibe different when you're like in a shitty bullpen versus when you're in like one of the greatest, most dominant, you know, reliever groups of all time?
I think it's just like the faith in everybody from 1 through 8
yeah.
to get the job done. Like, there's not one situation or one guy where you're going, oh, this guy. Like, it's not like
right.
that. You're sitting there like,
right.
it's like, I've only pitched twice in the playoffs, but like, you're looking at it, I'm like, why, like, I'm not like never going to complain, because like, everybody's
getting
executing.
Out.
So yeah,
right.
it's like, where's the complaint? You're like,
yeah, yeah.
At some point you're like, no, it's like, just be ready. You be ready whenever your name is called
right.
and then things are fine. And somebody said this earlier this year, and like the problem, or not the problem, but like the, I guess it's kind of a problem, but like, good teams have starters that don't play for them. If that makes sense.
Yes.
Like, good teams have starters that have to be utility men, have to come up and clean up innings, have to come in and
right.
throw other innings. And that would be closers, would be starting shortstop, starting third baseman, starting center fielders, left fielders, starting pitchers that are in the bullpen. You got big league arms in AAA. Like good teams have depth that would be starters on other teams because that's how you make a good team.
You don't win 106 games or whatever with your best nine.
No.
You win it with your best 35, right?
30, like, yeah, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
You win it because you have depth and you
yeah.
If you have an injury, yeah, you might not get the same production as option A, but the fact is, like, you look at it, is option B is as good as most other teams' option
right.
A or option B. You're looking mm-hmm. at it going, all right, well, our replacement play, like the replacement for the hurt guy is as good as an everyday regular for right. another team. And you're like, that's how you win a lot of games.
Like, and you don't need to respond to this, but Jordan, like, the example of that is like Hunter Brown's starting game 4 for the Phillies.
If he was on your team.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's yeah. part of the thing there is like yeah. the Astros' seventh option.
Right.
To start let alone
Luis Garcia or Keedy, right? I mean, it just goes on and on. And this is a good transition to the last thing I want to ask you about, which is the 18-inning game. And I'm not just saying this as you know, a sad Mariners fan. I'm saying this as someone who watched all 6 hours and was just like, oh, yeah, no, they're never going to give up a run. Like, it doesn't matter who's going to come in. So you pitched the 11th, I believe. So you contributed to that. Now, you're out in the bullpen for at least, you know, 7-8 innings. And then where are you for the rest of the game? Are you front top side of the dugout? Are you in the clubhouse? How did you experience after your inning the remainder of that marathon?
I was all over the place, honestly. I was back and forth from the dugout to the clubhouse. I was, like, every inning trying to change an article of clothing to hopefully coax in a run. But, yeah, like, it's like just all the guys were sitting there just, like, obviously you know how that goes. Like, you're sitting there just, like, making things up, hoping for, like, a run. So you just sit there, you're like, well, I'm going to change my hat. And I'm, like, I think Mushinski was wearing, like, one of my shirts. And you're sitting there, like, trading gear to, like, try to get a run. Like, it's just, like, it's stupid, but you're like, oh, that's, like, whatever you can do. It's like, I'm already done. I cannot go back and play. So, like, this is maybe right. my way to affect the game.
The other funny thing for you is, like, that's the most time you've ever spent in a dugout?
Oh, no. I
a big league?
I started a bunch of
okay,
games.
Okay, yeah, I guess we – oh, yeah, yeah.
True.
In Tampa. But yeah. here, the most time you'd spent in the Astros dugout.
Oh,
easily,
for sure.
Right?
For sure. And although I think the ridiculous thing about it is, like – you looked at that, and I think Luis, when the game ended, had, like, what, 65 pitches? So he probably had another 35 pitches. So he had two innings.
Oh, he could have kept going. He could have kept going,
and
for sure.
And then we also had 100 pitches from Urquidy next. So it's like we had maybe another 10, 11 innings to go before, like, we were out of arms.
This is the thing. That's how I felt watching it. I was like, oh, well, here comes Garcia. But, like, they're not done here. Like, they can keep going,
we
you know?
Punting.
And poor Penn Murphy goes out there and, you know, he did his best, but at some point an Astros hitter is going to hit it over the fence. I mean, that's pretty much how that's going to work.
But I mean, dude, I mean, Murphy threw the ball really well against
them
all year, and he threw the ball well against them.
Of course.
Mean, their pin is good. Like, they
really
good. They threw the ball really good, dude. Just, that was just like, in those games, we talked about it obviously watching the Cleveland
Tampa
game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at some point, like, when those games happen, like the pitching is almost. It's like a running back in football. Like, they're running downhill. Like, at all times. Like, seriously, the pitching staffs are, like, getting to the point where, like, they're rolling downhill. And, mm-hmm. like, they have the advantage. And, obviously, the hitters are in at bat 7. So, they're getting worn down. They've been on their feet a
they're
long
exhausted.
Time. Yeah. So, like, it's like the pitchers are still fairly fresh. But they're also, like, running downhill while the offense is trying to, like, catch a breath. So, like, those games, like, end up that long, like if a team doesn't score, I feel like in those type of games, in like the
right.
11th, 12th,
it's over.
Then it could be 16, 17 innings, mm-hmm. and then at some point, it's going to be one swing that ends it. It's not
right.
Most teams aren't gonna, like, I feel like in those games, you're not gonna string together 4 hits, 5 hits to score 2 runs. It's a solo pump that, like, ends the game most of the time.
The Mariners had one guy on third base, and it was the second inning. So, like,
I didn't know that's wild.
Yeah, like, it was, but I mean, the Astros, I think, had 3 or 4, you know, before Pena. So it was crazy. Were you in the dugout for the Pena homer, or were you in the bathroom, or?
I was actually in the clubhouse, but as soon as I was getting ready to walk down, and I heard everybody go crazy, and I looked up at the TV, and it was like, obviously it's on like a 12 second delay, mm-hmm. so it's like I heard the, like, our dugout get loud, and I was like, oh, he probably hit like a double. And then I watched him hit it, and I go, oh, damn. And I'm like,
that's not a double.
Yeah, and I sprinted to the dugout, and like, yeah, it was just like, I think it was just one of those like crazy moments that you're like, man, I wish I don't know. I wish I could have like been out there for the entire at bat, because like I literally just went up to like pee or something. I don't even really remember what I right. was doing. I was coming back and I was like, oh damn, that happened.
But like Ryan Stanek
can't hold his piss in. You heard it here first.
Here's here's my question though. Okay, so the celebration after that. Okay. Now in my mind, like when I go for like a 6-hour bike ride, which I have done many times because I can't do what you do. And then I have one beer. I'm sauced because like I'm so dehydrated.
You have no moisture in your body.
Right. I've like sweated out all this energy. So for you, it's a little bit different because you just threw one in. But the idea of like Chaz or Pena or Altuve playing 6.5 hours of dehydrating, grueling, draining baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, the fucking catchers.
Well, yeah, Raleigh caught the whole game, and we were laughing. It's like Vasquez didn't start, but he caught a full game. Like
they both did.
Both catchers caught a full game that we had. It was like that's crazy. And
so was that. My question is like, was that celebration in any way wilder than other ones you'd been in because everyone was just so dehydrated? Like,
I mean,
did it hit different?
I don't know, because like.
You just lose it in that moment? Like, you're just in there and it's just a blur?
I feel like our celebration to go to the CS was a little bit more subdued.
Hmm.
Partially because I think the game was long. But also, like, our guys weren't going to be satisfied with going to the DS. So, like, I think our guys are like, no, we're going to, like, it's like, we know we're going to have to play and like, get after it to win. But, like, if we win this is just step one. Like that's like that. I feel like that's how like the team looked at it. So you're like, we have to win at that point. We, after the third win, we have 8 more wins. Like that's how, what was it we're trying to get to?
Every guest we've had on, we asked for their World Series prediction. So let me ask you, Ryan Stanek, who do you think's going to win the World Series? Who, if you had to pick one of these two teams, who do you think is going to win?
It's the Astros and Phillies are the two teams in it. Yeah,
the Astros are playing the Phillies. Who do you think is going to take this one home?
Obviously, obviously
what?
Obviously, I'm gonna like. I would pick us.
You would pick who's us? You pick the Astros.
Us.
All right.
Like, wow. Like, yeah. Okay. If you're on the team and you didn't pick your team, like what is wrong with you? Like.
All right, guys, you're here first. Ryan Stanek picks the Astros.
He's picking
to win the World Series. Wow, Joe Namath.
Get out of here with that.
You're good.
Thank you, Mr. Stanek. A pleasure as always.
Thank you, fellas. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, we are now very lucky to be joined by Jet himself. Jet Passan, welcome. It is not Jet season quite yet. People are still taking your tweets seriously and not making sure there is a blue check mark next to it. We'll save the off-season chatter for a few more weeks. Jeff, it's the World Series. It's the Astros and the Phillies. What is the most surprising thing about what you are looking out upon right now at Minute Maid Park? What are you most surprised about?
The Philadelphia Phillies being here?
What is he going to say? He's surprised by the Astros?
Okay, good. That's like a good place to start. Where does it register?
Like the 12 seed?
So, Jeff, you've seen some crazy shit in your day. You've been writing about baseball for a long time. I mean, where does this run really rank? Like, there has been some crazy moments, but it's not like they don't have some amazing baseball players. I mean, this isn't exactly a ragtag group. So, I mean, it is surprising for me, too. But, you know, how do you really, you know, rank it?
I think the surprise is reconciling the fact that they're really not a ton different than these mid-ass Phillies teams that have existed for like the last 3 years. Like essentially the whole Bryce Harper era has just been one constant stream of mid. And suddenly in 1 month they turn into world beaters. Mm-hmm. Baseball's awesome.
It's also really, really stupid, as evidenced by this run. And you're right that like the narrative of them being
You know that Tina EK 23 liked your post?
You can't be looking at my notifications here.
I can't help myself. I just heard the bling, and all of a sudden, when you hear that noise, it's Pavlovian. That you go, look, hold on. Oh, yeah.
I'm turning on silent. Jeff hears that noise and he's like, oh, I guess Judge is going to the Giants.
Okay. Oh, God, I hope it's not Rosenthal.
Let me ask you about the Astros.
Can I talk a little more about the Phillies, actually?
Yeah, go
because
ahead.
When teams like the Phillies, and I know the Braves were a little different last year because they were really banged up. You know, they were probably a true 95 win team that won 88 games. Now the Phillies are like a 87 win team. They've got flaws. They've got a bad defense. They've got a really thin bullpen. The depth of their starting rotation isn't great. They might, though, be built for a 1 month run where you have some extra off days and where when you have superstars, they can handle the elite pitching that exists a whole lot better than during the regular season where, you know, certain teams are beaten up on guys because they're not very good. The Phillies have guys who can hit elite pitching, and that is what I am most looking forward to in this series. There's so much elite pitching right now. It is ridiculous. The guys I talked to today, I'm doing a story about it. Just the number of 98 to 100 mile per hour fastballs that exist in this series more than anything I've ever seen in any series.
You were in Philly for game three, and then you hopped on the Amtrak, I presume, and went up to New York for the funerals for game three and four. Do you regret that you either opted for or were assigned to cover the Yankees capitulation instead of the most iconic home run of the decade? Like, I know that you are, like, this is your job, right? I get that. It's our job too. But was there any part of you that was like, damn, I wish I had, like, been in the yard to see that home run?
Sure. But I've seen some really cool shit in my days.
That's true.
So I try not to get...
There's no FOMO.
No.
Okay.
I don't get greedy. Like, in 2004, I was covering the Cardinals and Astros.
That was a good series.
It was an incredible...
It was a great series.
It was an incredible series, and it was the B series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't look back on missing... Okay. You know what I look back on with regret? There's one thing in my baseball writing career I look back on with regret. And
there's more than one. There's got to be more than one.
No, but Jeff, something is coming to mind. And so I'm excited to find out what it is.
Marley Rivera is coming to mind.
Hi, Jordan.
Wow.
Hi, Marley.
That was sultry.
I'm getting out of this very important conversation.
Super important.
What a cliffhanger. Okay, Jeff, what is it?
I was there the day that Pedro Martinez said that he did the Yankees call me daddy.
Yeah.
And I thought there is no way that he actually said that. And I totally misheard it. And no chance he would ever utter a quote like that, because what athlete would ever say that? And I didn't put it in my story.
And you missed it. You had the daddy.
I had the daddy quote.
Your daddy left you.
Yeah.
Jeff Passan's daddy left him. Okay, let's talk about the Houston Astros, the ballpark that we are sitting in, which has in many ways come to symbolize the month of October. Nothing says autumn like a train full of fucking oranges. This is an annual tradition now.
It's actually going right now.
It's moving right
it's
now in front of us.
Transporting the oranges 500 feet back and forth.
It's nothing like the Astros, right? It is. It's so symbolic to me. This stupid fucking train. It never moves. It never changes. Just like this player development dab. What is different about the 2022 Astros run compared to the last half decade that we've
seen? The 17, the 19, the 21.
What stands out to you about this?
Bullpen number one. Starting pitching depth number two. And this is, I wrote a column about this after they won the series. And it's a weird thing to me for somebody to make a mistake, get blowback on the mistake, and then turn the blowback from that mistake into something that makes them stronger and better. It's almost like, wait, so you get to screw up and benefit from that screw up, but it's the reality of human nature that the Astros have taken all of the vitriol that goes toward them. And I truly believe they are a mentally stronger group of players because of that. It reminds me in a little way about the first year. I know these are different things, but in the first year that the Miami Heat got Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade together, and they were cast as villains, they were not at their best. They couldn't be. They needed to figure out what world they could exist in comfortably to extract the best out of themselves. And I think what we're seeing with the 2022 Astros is a group that has figured out where it lives, both in history and in the present.
Because the 2020 team, they were doing this shit too, right? Like when they tried to come back against Tampa.
Yep.
But it rang hollow, I think, because it felt very defensive, right, Jordan? Like at the time, mm-hmm. they were trying to use the vitriol to push them forward, but it just didn't. It was like, shut up. Like, we don't need this. But now it feels more purposeful.
Yeah, and I would say, like, it really felt like Correa was the face of that. And I know that he took it on. I felt like the most kind of aggressive pushback. Not that he was saying we didn't do it, but he was just like, yeah, you know, like, I know you all hate me right now, and I'm just going to go forward and try to do my thing. And
but that never works, by the way.
Well, right. But then he leaves, and then not that's why they're different. But it is a funny contrast too. Now watching, you know, the most like nicest and lovable person ever in Jeremy Peña basically be 95% as good immediately. So,
oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Jose Altuve when you said the nicest and most lovable person, because he actually is.
Sure.
I've never said a word to him in my life, and nor has he said a word to me.
Really?
And so I just, not like out of any sort of disrespect, I just have not ever interacted with him. So I cannot confirm nor deny Altuve.
He is a genuinely wonderful human being, like to his teammates, family, people in the community, like legitimately beloved. Mm. I was talking with Garrett Cole for the Aaron Judge story I just wrote. He's like, the only teammate I've ever seen who cares as much about people as Aaron Judge as Jose Altuve.
Interesting.
And so it's a cognitive dissonance for me seeing Altuve get crushed like he does on the road, because number one, you know, everyone on that team had some culpability, involvement, whatever. But if we're going to look at, you know, felony versus misdemeanor, Altuve used the trash can bang the least of anyone. Mm-hmm. Like he just that wasn't something that he was involved in. And the buzzer stuff, I haven't found it. Evan Drellick hasn't found it. Andy Martino hasn't found it. Might exist.
Jordan hasn't found it either.
I haven't. I've been working real hard.
Jordan's been scribing it up. Jordan's been muckraking up a story.
I was going to say, I think last time I was on with you guys, you weren't writers.
No, we were just shitheads.
And now, well, I mean, you know, that part hasn't changed.
Por que no los dos, el jefe. Here's my last question for you, Jeff. Any casual-ish human being in regards to baseball will see the words Houston Astros for the rest of their lives, probably, and think about trash cans. And that is a fact. History might change some of that. But like people that we went to high school with who don't watch baseball, that is the association that they make. And like, fair or not, that is where this will be, right? And a lot of that is because of how it's burst into the greater consciousness and the hilarity of it being
a trash can.
Yeah, it's very silly. Where are you in mentally, like with this whole the development of this narrative of like, is it time to forgive? Is it that simple? Is there a time to move on? Are we there? Like, I struggle and go back and forth with it, because it's like, people cheated and we don't want to see the people who cheated be rewarded for their cheating or be rewarded at all. But at the same time, this is not a team currently actively benefiting from cheating as far as we know.
And the only players who are still around from that time are Verlander, McCullers, Bregman, and Altuve. So I'm, I guess, and Gurriel. So I'm curious for you where you're at in kind of wrangling all of those disparate things and how society and the baseball fandom at large should approach the 2022 Houston Astros.
Let me just say, people should approach it however they want to. That's what fandom is. You get to decide what your terms are. You get to decide who you like, who you dislike. You don't have to be rational about it. But if you want to be rational in your sports viewing, listening, consuming, I think you have to separate what the 2017 Astros did from what the 2022 Astros are doing. I think you can look back at 2017 with sadness in the same way that I look back at Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa using PEDs with sadness because they didn't need to, because they were good enough,
right?
Because they got greedy. And greed is something that all of us at some point or another in our lives has had. So there is some sort of relatability there with that 2017 team, if we're all being honest with ourselves. Now, what they did was absolutely wrong, and we shouldn't forget about it. But I don't think remembering 2017 and appreciating 2022 are mutually exclusive. We can do both at the same time.
Right.
And even though there are players from the 2017 team still around, even though there's, you know, central players, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yuli Gurriel, Justin Verlander, Lance McCullers, like five of the dudes on this team. It's a half decade ago, and I just have a difficult time holding them what they're doing now as to be any less,
right,
because of what they did back then. I will always look at 2017 as,
like, we're looking at it right now from where Jeff and I are sitting for people listening.
Yeah, we really are.
We are looking directly at the 2017 banner.
There's a gold flag, and I'm looking at it right now, and all I will ever think is, why is it on this stupid goddamn train track? Why is it there?
There's an orange is gonna hit it.
Unbelievable.
The only thing tainting that is the orange beneath it.
It's just so ugly.
We asked all of the guests on the show this, who's gonna win the World Series, Jeff? And how? How will they do it?
Who and how?
Or instead of a boring prediction like X in this many games, give me something about this series that you believe will happen firmly. Like a prediction, more like let's call it a conviction.
The Astros are going to pound Bryce Harper inside with fastballs, middle and up, which he had a lot of trouble hitting coming back from his thumb surgery, but has not really been done to him in the first two rounds. The Astros are going to throw a lot of breaking balls and off-speed stuff to other Philadelphia players because their numbers against off-speed stuff, especially this postseason, are dreadful compared to fastballs. And the Astros, on the strength of their pitching with just enough hitting, are going to win the World Series in six games. How's that?
That's like, he said it better than I ever could, and that's pretty much how I feel. So I think we'll leave it. I think we'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Jordan. Jake is. How would I describe the look on your face right there?
What?
You just kind of sneered a little bit.
I mean,
are you?
He's mad about you, how reasonable you sound.
I think I need to eat lunch. Is how I feel. I think that's how I feel. I think I forgot to eat today.
You need to eat some meal.
I will say this. I met Matt Vierling earlier today. Might be my new favorite player.
Good vibes, right?
There you go.
Great vibes.
That's a good note to end on, because you guys heard Matt Vierling earlier on in this podcast, and you know that the vibes are tremendous. Jeff Passan, I'm sure we will talk to you again soon at some point on this disaster of a podcast, and I can't wait for that next time.
The World Series has yet to begin, but we have reached the end of the journey here on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We cried, we laughed, we talked to probably too many people. You've been listening for too many minutes, and so we are going to say goodbye. Jordan, you know it's time to go here in Houston because they are closing the roof
Ooh, yeah, that's your cue to head on out of there. Get some rest.
That's the wrap it up box. That's the wrap it up box.
You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this mess of an episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. And reminder, we will be going with much shorter episodes after every game of the 2022 World Series. So make sure you're subscribed, following wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be on those feeds as soon as possible. So thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed. And we will talk to you again very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.